Welcome to the MBG podcast.
Let's fire everybody.
All right, welcome everybody. Episode number 70, the Message Board Geniuses podcast. This is Who's. I got Casey, Joy, MBG. We're back after a week off. For the last 2 weeks, we've been seeing signs that college football season's on the horizon. Of course, one of the big signs every year is a discussion and analysis surrounding the spring games. Y'all been following or watching any of the spring games so far this year?
No.
I watched exactly zero spring games.
I've watched some. I'm sure.
I just go to the message boards to get my really down to earth, you know, low key, very well organized thoughts on the future.
It all looks so good when you finish that. It was like you confused yourself.
I did.
So, I mean, there's a lot of discourse every year that I think is hilarious. One of the big things is, you know, talking about the spring game attendance. I don't know if y'all get this in with your teams, your conferences, but like the look how low their attendance is. Our spring game is awesome. Like, it just killed. Like, who the hell cares how many people are at your spring game, right?
Last year we had that between Clemson and South Carolina. Like, Clemson announced 56,000. South Carolina's game was the next week. They announced 57,000. Just to have that, you know, extra thousand.
Right.
Like, that's great. I laughed. I thought it was hilarious. Like, yeah, you're right. Who cares?
Right. It makes no difference at all.
It'd be funny if that wasn't also South Carolina's regular season attendance, but that's so much different.
After halftime, it's half of that.
Literally.
I just enjoy the people who think that they can arrive at any sort of definite conclusions about their team based on a scrimmage of themselves. Like, oh, the defense was awesome. Well, maybe your offense sucks. I don't know. I mean, maybe your defense isn't really that good. I mean, like Quinn Ewers comes in, or not Quinn Ewers, but Arch Manning. Like his first pass, he threw like a 75-yard touchdown, you know, and it was all talk about, oh, well, maybe, you know, he's going to overtake Ewers eventually and be the star. Like, I mean, maybe that cornerback sucks.
Right.
I mean, you know, I don't know. That's what I get.
The blown coverages for me. Like, he blew the coverage. I'm like, he's playing against his own teammate, you dummy. Like, he's not going to hurt him. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the jumps to conclusions, especially the thing that kills me is whenever there's a guy who's not the heralded, or in our case, a guy that basically no one had heard of who, like, blows up in the spring game, and all of a sudden everybody's talking about him. Like, we have this white wide receiver who just went ham at our spring game. And I'll be honest, I didn't even know his name beforehand, and now everybody's like, oh, is he the new Hunter Renfrow? I'm like, no, you dummy. Like, no, he had a nice spring game, but, you know,
in a nice practice.
Maybe take it back to that. Right?
Yeah, it's definitely taken way too seriously.
I did like the Ole Miss spring game, to be honest with you. The like the dunk contest, the hot dog eating
competition.
They're
having fun. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Joy's rolling her eyes.
I mean, these guys play against each other all spring. They scrimmage against each other all spring. I mean, for them, you know, it's got to be a lot more fun than just going out.
Well, Lane Kiffin farewell tour. Of course, it's going
to. You know what that does? That gets kids want to come to the SIP.
Yeah. Well, the funniest thing I saw, there was some video. I wish I had remembered to write down who it was, of this guy. He's talking about the Ole Miss spring game, and he was saying that it's really Lane Kiffin not doing his guys a service, because the reason he did it that way is to keep kind of his backups and stuff from being plucked out, you know, by other schools who see him on film and, you know, try and get him in the portal. I'm like, man, you can be cynical, but it's like just a fun spring game. You know what? Like, not everything has to be that serious. I don't know.
It's the perfect crazy way to say it.
Yeah.
We didn't even have one. We lost so many players to the portal and to injuries. We didn't have enough. We didn't even have one. We had a practice.
Y'all don't even need it, though. Let's be honest.
Right.
Right. You don't want to put that stuff on tape, MBG.
Yeah.
Let everybody see it. Right?
I mean, we didn't want USC to get any early looks at it. We're going to go in there and catch
nervous.
We're going to catch them off guard.
Right.
Very vanilla.
They'll never see it coming.
You're missing out on finding out who's going to be your Hunter Renfro, MBG. That's the only downside there. All right, so next up we have our mailbag question. This week's question comes to us from friend of the podcast at J_bag24, who asks, what's your football guilty pleasure? The kind of thing that happens occasionally that's dumb or frustrating, but you love when it happens. And this, he goes on to say, I'll pick the drop ball at the one before the touchdown was in the bag. Always get a kick out of those knucklehead videos.
That's
cool. All right, so Casey, you have anything like that that you enjoy during football season?
Sure. Jason, welcome to the wonderful world of getting your mailbag question read on the show. We appreciate you getting in. Our producers have a rather strict process with these questions, but you were able to get in, and it's a welcome change. Anything to not read that 5-foot Notre Dame dude's incessant questions week after week. Why is Notre Dame even still a thing? All right, I'm digressing, not answering my question as per normal. My answer is probably going to be a little different, which is likely redundant from week to week. But I love when referees don't call any holds all game, and then fan bases run to social media and message boards to make sure that everyone knows that the game would have been won if only for that one hold at the 8-minute mark of the second quarter down by 35 points. It's one of those odd things that's an extreme pet peeve of mine and a guilty pleasure all rolled up into one, and no fan base is amused. They all do it, including my Tiger fans. I love games with no holds mostly.
And they post that one screenshot of like the tackle's hand just barely outside the shoulder pad, like, oh, right. See?
Right.
But my team is completely clean.
Never got called.
I did get called out last year after complaining about a holding call by Hoos, though. So
that's my bad.
Like, thought you'd never mind.
I like to do the thing on Twitter where I say, hey, I never complain about the refs, but, and then I complain about the refs. Like... All right, Joy, what's yours?
Mine is just college kickers. Just college kickers, just those two words together, college kickers. Death, taxes, and not trusting college kickers. Particularly one of my favorites is when you've put in the same kicker and he's missed 4 field goals in a row, but then you need him to kick the like game-winning kick or like the kick to go into overtime, and all you've done is just completely tear him apart after he's missed 4 kicks, but now you're putting the entire game into his hands. You know, and what 18-year-old doesn't love that kind of pressure? So it's really just college kickers. Just I feel like that as a whole embodies everything that I.
Yeah, it's so different from the pros, right? Like, especially because I'm a Ravens fan, obviously. And so I watch Justin Tucker, and when he misses a kick, it's surprising. I watch our kickers for UVA, and we make a kick, and I'm like, ooh, that was awesome.
And it's always like that. He was a soccer player on the local rec team. And
right.
It's like, and then they tell this whole story that makes you love him, and then he can't hit a 20-yarder, and you're like, what happened?
We had it this year. We brought a kid in from Wall Street that had 1 year of eligibility left.
That's right.
The week before Florida State, and he had the chance to win it and kicked it like me.
Kicked it like that was such a sad me.
Well, I played soccer all my life, but I'm like my hamstring hurt just even saying that right now.
At least you're self-aware.
All right, MBG, what do you got?
All right, so he did say guilty pleasure, right?
Yes.
So I realize this is illegal, but my favorite is the old blindside block. Like you just see like someone just kind of leisurely jogging downhill, like thinking their way out of the play, and then someone just ear holes them. Those are my favorite. Like, especially if it's like a quarterback who just threw an interception, or the punter, or the kicker, just kind of jogging out there, and some big linebacker just comes and just ear holes them.
CTE in action, right?
Yeah, does it add to it if they get wheeled off or carted off in an ambulance? Like, which one do you like?
Well, I'm not wishing injury on anyone. I just get a kick out of someone not realizing that they're about to get trucked. I think it's funny.
All right, so mine is kind of a general thing. I like whenever I see a play that is so incredibly dumb, you think to yourself, oh my God, I don't know if I've ever seen that before. the one that came to mind, just so I know I talk about UVA, but this is making fun of UVA. So we had a guy, Aaron Brooks, who played quarterback for us back in the late 90s, and he was the Saints starting quarterback for several years. And this is probably like 20 years ago, and I actually looked at the YouTube clip before we came on to make sure I was remembering it right. But there's a play, if you Google Aaron Brooks backwards pass, where he drops back to pass, he's at like his own 40-yard line, he's getting pressured, and he literally turns around backwards and airmails it over his offensive lineman's head, like throws a pass directly backwards from the line of scrimmage that goes backwards 20 yards. I think Deuce McAllister picks it up on like the 20-yard line and, you know, ends up being a loss of like 17. And I just remember watching that play thinking, I don't even know what potential outcome you were going for there. So any just, you know, brain fart like that, I just particularly enjoy.
The butt fumble?
Yeah, right. Which, by the way, also involved a UVA guy. I think he ran into the back of, I think it was DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
It was.
Yeah, Mark Sanchez. Yep. Yeah, that's another great one, right? We're like, oh, I've never seen that before. All right. MBG, I'm going to have to go on YouTube and pull up clips of guys just getting ear holed.
Good stuff, man.
I fully enjoy those as well. All right, that brings us to our next segment, Genius of the Week. As always, each of us is going to nominate a player, coach, team, conference, someone who did something particularly dumb. We'll put it to a Twitter vote and see who wins. For our last vote, Casey's nominee, Coach Cal, won with 50% of the vote, followed by my nominee, Dan Hurley, with 32%. MBG's nominee, RCG Media, came in third with 11% of the vote. And Joy's nominee, Jeff Landry, came in fourth with 7%. So now I'm in the lead with 25 wins, followed by Joy with 15, Casey with 13, Courtney with 1. MBG, you are still on 0. For reference, or I'm sorry, you're now 0-54 for reference.
I really thought it was going to be last week. I thought episode 69
it should have been.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in the list.
Damn you, Cal.
Yeah, it's funny. And I know I say this all the time, but when I do the Google search and try and find the losing streaks, usually I've got like a few to pick from. Now it's like if I can find one that comes up, I'm very happy. So this week there was one. For reference, in November of 2021, the Colgate basketball team knocked off Syracuse 100-85 to end a 54-game losing streak against the Orange that dated back to 1962. Colgate went on to beat Syracuse again in 2022, bringing their all-time record against Cuse to 47-128. Which means to even that series, you'd have to win for the next 81 years in a row. So once again, MBG, you're in fine company. All right. Casey, who you got this week?
This week, it's going to seem like I'm stealing some MBG's thunder, but that's not the intent at all. So I'm going with Zechariah Flapjack Owens as my genius of the week. It's not Flapjack. That often. Yeah, you know him, MBG?
Yeah,
he's probably buddies of your guy.
MBG never gets to do that. He's so happy right now.
I love it.
It's not that often that I go after one of my own, but this one was just too good for me to pass up. As we all know, the transfer portal is a one-way street at Clemson, and the Tigers lost not one but two players this week to the portal. That is actually an important part of the story. The first was a defensive end named Adam Kaseya. I'm probably butchering his name, but he transferred to Minnesota. There were some negative comments on Facebook about his transfer, and so his mother, Erin Owens, remember that last name, was quoted as saying basically that the Clemson culture is not for everyone and that they as a family still love Clemson and Dabo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it was time for the kid to move on. The second kid to transfer was Zechariah Flapjack Owens, who announced his transfer today, which is Monday, April 22nd. He must have gotten wind of Erin Owens' quote where it just said, here's what Owens had to say. That was the exact quote. Here's what Owens had to say, to which he responded on Twitter as like a quote tweet with just the words false with a laughing emoji, thinking it was a quote by him. Reading is fundamental. And for that, Zechariah Flapjack Owens is quite literally the genius of the week.
Oh, Flapjack.
I kept reading it going, he can't possibly think this is, he didn't, anyway.
That's Flapjack for you, man. He's always been stuff like that.
hope I got his nickname Jackie. Right, but even if I didn't, it doesn't matter.
I'm telling you, if you guys knew Flapjack, you'd just shake your head right now.
Not surprising. All right, Joy, who are you going with?
All right, I'm going to MBG's favorite sport, which we all know is baseball. In the Oakland A's New York Yankees game, the umpire had heard a lot from, I guess, the New York Yankees manager, so he gave him one more chance. He was like, hey, if you say one more thing, you're out of here. And the Yankees manager said, okay, and they literally, the camera stays on him the whole time. He doesn't say a word. And then the next thing you know, the umpire's throwing him out of the game. Turns out the umpire had heard a fan that was heckling him behind the Yankees bench and threw him out. When approached with this, he actually doubled down. You know, I know it's hard to just say, like, I made a mistake, but he could not do that. And he basically had a two-paragraph answer of why he threw him out. He basically said that he's in charge of the dugout. And he heard someone in the dugout. He never heard that it was anyone in the stands. So he's the one that had to go. Basically just blaming the manager over and over and over again, instead of just being like, hey, I jacked up. So for basically, you know, embodying 2024 and a lack of accountability, the home plate umpire, Hunter Wendell, whatever his freaking last name is, it's not important, is my genius of the week.
You know why it is important? Because his family owns the Major League Baseball umpiring school in Florida.
That makes it three times worse.
Wendelstedt, yeah, the Wendelstedt School in Florida. And yeah, it was just amazing. I umpired for a lot of years, and I had rabbit ears too. But man, that went over the top. Holy moly. It was the first inning. No outs. Top of the first.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that. I saw the video. I didn't know it was top of the first.
Yeah, apparently he was ranked as the third worst umpire in 2023. So he's really starting out strong in 2024.
Unions, man. You got to love them.
All right, MBG. Is this the week?
Yeah, possibly.
I don't know. Possibly. You got Flapjack. You're up against Flapjack.
It's true. Flapjack.
I don't know if it's 69. I don't know if it'll happen.
So what do you guys think is probably the best movie ever made?
Shooter.
Step Brothers,
yeah, it's up there.
Okay, so Rambo, First Blood.
Okay, you guys are all wrong. Whose was the closest? But it's clear. I thought it was a general consensus among everyone that the best movie ever made was Weekend at Bernie's, followed by Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Yeah, I saw that in the theater. By the way, I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
I may have taken a date to see Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, it's a perfect date movie.
Joy, you've never seen Weekend at Bernie's?
Never seen it. I am definitely going to look at when it came out in 1989. Oh, so I was -4 when it came out.
Right. But that's a cinematic masterpiece. If you've ever taken a film class in college, I'm sure that they studied
right after Casablanca.
Yeah, we didn't have film at LSU. I was a sports management major.
Well, so obviously.
Weekend at Bernie's, you know.
You need a little culture to you, Joy.
Well, I ain't no nerd, so I'm over here just listening to sports.
So, Weekend at Bernie's, clearly the best movie ever. So, just keep that in mind as we talk about who I think is a genius of the week. A young lady from Brazil named Erica de Souza Vieira Nunes. You guys may have seen this. Ms. Nunes brought a man in a wheelchair into a South American bank and attempted to take out a loan in his name, but the man had been dead for hours, police in Brazil said Wednesday. Ms. Nunes was arrested following the bizarre incident in Bangu, a neighborhood in western Rio de Janeiro. The woman claimed that the man, identified by police as 68-year-old Paulo Roberto Braga, was her uncle and wanted to sign papers for a $3,250 loan. Did you guys see this video? She wheels in this dude, this old dude who's obviously, I mean, this is totally Weekend at Bernie's, right? Yeah. She wheels him in a wheelchair, like up to the desk, and she's like trying to put the pen in his hand, like trying to move his hand. Like she's trying to, the people at the bank, like, he doesn't look real good. I don't think he's healthy, to the point where they called the ambulance who came and pronounced him dead. Exactly. It pronounced him
very
dead.
Yeah.
Said he had been dead for several hours, and she was not quite as crafty as our friends in the movie Weekend at Bernie's, who were able to pull this off for an entire weekend. Think about it. They pulled off an entire weekend. They fooled everybody for a whole weekend. This lady had, I mean, like 5 minutes max. She had to go in, have him sign a form and get out, and she couldn't pull it off, which makes the movie Weekend at Bernie's all the more spectacular to know that they pulled off an entire weekend party at the beach with their dead uncle Bernie.
She really just needed to put the sunglasses on him. I mean, that would have done the trick, I think.
Like, why didn't she watch the movie before?
Right. Right. Well, not with Silverman and Andrew McCarthy in action.
Exactly.
She just wanted to go with it.
That's a fake. It's got to be
exactly
a fake.
Like, not a fake. So, for not studying up on how to pull this off properly, Erica de Sousa Vieira Nunes is my genius of the week.
Yeah, not that she did it.
Right. No. Like, in theory, the plan is it's a good plan. Right,
it's foolproof.
But the execution was terrible. I mean, when the roadmap is right in front of you, just go down to Blockbuster, rent Weekend at Bernie's, bring it home,
pop it in the VHS,
watch it a couple times, maybe. I mean, just to make sure that you got everything.
You probably have to rewind it because that jerk that rented it before you didn't.
I mean, this lady, if she would have done that, she could have got a loan, she could have bought a house, she could have got a car. I mean,
she was set for life.
Yeah, exactly. But no. She thought she'd just pull it off the skin of her teeth, off a whim, right? Can't do it like that, Casey.
The Tao of Andrew McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to have to switch up the order one of these days. So my genius of the week is Jonte Porter. Last week, the NBA announced that Porter had been banned from the league for life for betting on NBA games. The league's investigation revealed that from January to March of this year, Porter used an associate's online betting account to place 13 bets on NBA games with a total payout, I think, of around $21,000. But the investigation also revealed that before the Raptors game on March 20th, an associate of Porter's made $80,000 worth of prop bets on Porter, taking the unders with a potential payout of $1.1 million. Porter then left the game after 3 minutes. This guy apparently thought he was going to cash everything in. However, the prop bet was frozen, not paid out due to unusual activity, namely that no one in their right mind would ever put $80,000 on Jonte Porter prop bets. So for throwing away his NBA career for $21,000 and seemingly doing everything in his power to get caught, Jonte Porter is my genius of the week.
Oh, that's good.
My favorite part of that was, I don't know if you all read they put out like an announcement after the investigation, but they were so petty in it. And part of it, they said, you know, they're laying out the bets that he made and said at one point he had a parlay where there's only one Raptors game that he bet on. It was part of a 3-game parlay. And then they had to point out that he lost that parlay, which I thought was hilarious. All right. Before we move on to our next segment, we want to give a quick shout out to CFB Home for sponsoring the MBG podcast. You can find them on Twitter at CFB Home and online at fifthquarter.net. Also, we're doing a couple of cross promotions with other podcasts again this week. The first is with the Sickos Committee podcast. They had a new episode drop last week titled Female Cheerleaders in Short Skirts No Less, in which they discuss the transfer portal, whether spring games should be televised, NBA Sickos highlights, and much more. We're also doing a cross promotion with the Slander U podcast. They also had a new episode drop last week titled The Resurrection of Slander U, where they discuss the NCAA tourney, college football playoff, the Director's Cup, and much more. We love both those shows, so check them out. All right, we have another great guest lined up for y'all this week. This week's guest is the executive editor and co-owner of TexAddicts.com, which we featured on our show a time or two. He's also co-host of the popular Texas A&M show, The Luchador Podcast. Welcome to the show, Billy Lucci.
What's up, guy?
Billy, welcome.
How y'all, man?
Long time to coming.
I am honored. I feel like I am connected to the message board genius. Whether I like it or not, I feel like I am. Forever.
That's why you feel like that.
I mean, I am happy to provide as much content as TexAggs needs to provide.
I will say sometimes I hold back because I'm like, oh man, I've just done too many of them lately. I can't. I've got to.
You're like, we are not
ration them out.
We're not a Tech Tag Stan account over here.
I try not to be. I will say that Texas A&M fans are very good at taking it in stride, very laid back, and they've been very good with it.
Hey, we won the award a couple years ago. I was honored.
There's an award? That's right. Yeah, it's like a championship belt.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was all about it. But half the time y'all put these up, and I swear I don't know. Like, I don't see them. You know, I'll see that, and I'll laugh, or sometimes I'll go, oh, my gosh. But I try first on when they make it to y'all's Twitter.
It's the best of the best.
That's right.
It's calmed down since Jimbo's gone. I will say that. It's really unfortunate for me.
No, you've calmed down. I don't know if the board.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's entirely true, Hoops.
Joy, were you leading the parade when that experiment finally failed?
Wait, honestly, you want me to be really honest? For a second there, I was like, wait, I've lost half my personality. Because like half the personality was hating Jimbo at A&M. And then I was like, who do I hate? Like, what do I hate now? What am I supposed to do with myself?
It was so close to me. And I've got a ton of LSU friends, good friends, like longtime friends. When I was in college, one of my really good buddies here was from, a couple buddies from Hammond, and then another one from, I can't think of his town now, Amy. And so they were family, LSU people. So I would go to a game at least a year in Baton Rouge. So I've always had LSU friends, but I've had for years, I had no ammo. And the one thing that Jimbo did was they split with LSU, but that wasn't good enough because in between was a national title for LSU and they beat the Aggies 50-3 or 50-7 that year. So I was so close to getting that, like Jimbo was going to kind of, he came so close to winning a lot of games against LSU, but overall 500, at least he salvaged that. But I was like, there was a point in time there when I was like, oh, this is going to be perfect. If the guy that LSU wanted not once, but twice came to A&M and finally turned the corner against LSU and kind of shifted that balance of power. But obviously they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, I'm not sad about it. I'm not gonna lie. Joy's like,
I was never really worried about it.
No, I was worried that year. I was a little bit worried, but Jesus came through for me. Thank God. Right.
Jesus and Joe Burrow. Exactly.
Well, y'all consider him pretty much in the same level, right?
Yeah, he rivals him sometimes.
All right, so Billy, before we get to the post, we usually go around and have each of us ask our guests a question and just let you cook. Does that work?
Perfect, perfect.
All right, man. So Casey, he's already warned you. That's lead off. And
Well, I've always been told the leadoff hitter's got to see the most pitches, so I feel like I have to. I don't know that. I don't know if that analogy is close to working, but anyway, Billy freaking Lucci, the godfather of the message board culture, co-owner of TexAgs, a site that is featured prominently here on Message Board Geniuses podcast. It's an honor to have you on, sir. And quite honestly, I feel like I should apologize to you on behalf of my cohorts here for waiting 70 episodes before we had you. No. It is an audio-only medium, but peep the fit as the...
I saw it. Like, I don't have my contacts in, so I'm blind as a bat right now, but I did see that giant block ATM. That was just for you. Very welcome.
Don't tell Chris Marley.
A little bit more, Casey.
All right. You, sir, are the true essence of message board royalty, so welcome. We are truly happy to have you. I feel like you and I should be best friends, though, earlier than this, because me being a Clemson alum and you being Texas A&M, I'm sure you remember, but if not, let me remind you of the love fest between the two schools' administrations after the home-and-home series in 18 and 19, where apparently our two cults, fan bases, were apparently very cordial with one another, which I was extremely proud of as an alum, knowing just how friendly we can be and are known for. But I guess after winning two national championships, that's kind of quelled a little bit, at least nationally, where I'm not sure Clemson fans are seen as nice anymore, which hopefully isn't the case. But there's a lot of vitriol in the world and on message boards, as you know.
Yeah,
but I'm always nice, for what it's worth, but I'll tell you that one time in 2015, we lost a Pitt, and there were some wayward Pitt fans there before the game looking for beer and hot dogs, which I had both of. So I gave them some and talked nicely to them pregame. And fast forward a few hours, and they were nowhere to be found. I probably wouldn't have given them hot dogs and beer after the game, though, for what it's worth.
They won.
Yeah, that leads me directly into my question. What was your favorite part of being a yell leader at A&M?
I'm sure there's got to be like a Photoshop there somewhere.
I hope there is.
I never tried out for yell leader. But
can you explain that culture a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to tell you, explain the culture a little bit, and then I'll tell you my biggest pet peeve, and I've even said it to people here. I'm like, So the culture, it goes back to a time and place that none of us were around for, long before, and they would do, you know, the jokes and the storytelling and the, you know, like, and people, it's funny bringing people to A&M games that have nothing to do with, most probably one of my favorite things, that have like nothing to do with A&M, and bringing it nowadays. And I went to Yale practice when I was in school or whatever, but nowadays I go when people come in town, they go, whether it's people with the SEC network or media or just people that don't come to A&M games, and they say, we got to go to one of these Yale practices. So I'll take them. We'll sit in a suite on the other side. It's actually really cool to watch from there, because you just see you're looking at the crowd, backs of the Yale leaders, and you see it's pretty cool when those decks are stacked up in the middle of the night. But the whole thing, it's all very, very old tradition carried on. And you know, the Yale leaders, I think they're an integral part of what makes that game day environment what it is. And it is so quirky and so damn weird if you don't know A&M, and it's so unique to A&M that I really think it's really cool. Those dudes put in so much towards the school spirit, and they catch hell around the country, and they are so proud of what they do. But it is so bizarre. But I would go through, and you guys probably do it. There's a million things in college sports. Like when I was watching John Calipari and all those people screaming "Woo Pig Suey" the other day, just as weird. But I love that too. So, but I'll tell you my one thing that I think gets A&M in the crosshairs, and it's not it's not the best PR. It's the jokes without the context of what's going on, and without the knowledge of so you're really not going to educate everyone with the background. We're like, this throws all the way back to the 19 whatevers when it was all male, all military, and this Old Rock, which is, you know, you've got Sarge and Old Rock that they tell stories about. And people are going, what are these guys? And the cadence and the whole thing, right? But I don't like that I think it started during COVID maybe, but like this live feed from like ground level, looking back at an empty stadium behind them and not at the 30, 40 plus thousand that come to this midnight yell and show all this spirit and enthusiasm. And it's a pretty cool deal on a Friday night before a big football game. But all you're looking at is the yell leaders, and they've got like the sound out of they've got the sound out. So it just sounds like there's these people doing these herky jerky, no one telling these strange jokes. And it definitely, people obviously don't get it. And obviously they go, what in the hell are these guys? And so I do think they need to look at that and change that up, just to not provide quite so much fodder.
We definitely all have it, right? I get irate when everyone says, oh, Clemson rushing the field again after beating Wofford.
It's a slow walk.
It's a tradition that people just don't understand outside of the walls.
Can I tell you something about Clemson?
Please don't.
It's good. That field storming. That slow walk onto the field.
Meeting at the paw, it's called.
Meeting at the paw, and a lot of the Clemson fans, especially even students, stopped me really politely and were, you know, they recognized me or whatever, and they would take some, like, I took some pictures down there with them. I was like, oh, this is the nicest fan base. And none of them are bad. No, I mean, Joy, not even LSU. None of them are bad, honestly. Some are just more intense than others, but the Clemson was quite literally the nicest post-game experience I've had. Tennessee did get a little rough. Tennessee.
I was going to say, Tennessee is atrocious.
I had a guy yelling at me from, "You're that loser on the documentary." You're on, like, every, I don't know what got into him, got into his head, but I was like some kind of drug user, but he kept saying that.
That's funny.
But yeah, Tennessee was rough, but most of them are. Clemson was the nicest. It was.
I'll second that. I love me a good Clemson game. I love the Clemson fans. All right, Billy. Trajectory King. You know, I have to.
I mean, I told somebody that and they go, it is kind of good. I'm always big on the trajectory.
You are.
Of A&M until I'm not.
You are. And you know what? You just got to embrace it. Yeah. I will give you that. You just embrace who you are. So I had to throw it in there. I'm always the one that actually brings this whole podcast back to football. So my question for you is, what do you think the trajectory under Mike Elko will be? What are your expectations? Obviously, it's year one, but what do you think he's going to do? How quick of a turnaround do you think it's going to be? Do you think there will be one? Just kind of a little low-key idea of what you think is going to happen for the Aggies next year.
Yeah, I think
they're going to lose to LSU again, but that we can get into that later.
Games here. The last six home games.
Billy, I have to give it to you. I have to.
We've got a new – it's a home-and-home series is what I said they needed to do with LSU and Bama. Couldn't quite do it with Bama. Maybe now with Kalen DeBoer. Except now A&M's not going to play them every year. We do know. We don't know, but I think LSU will continue to be a permanent – hopefully they do that with the permanent rivals. I wish they would, but I guess they got to go to 9 teams to do that. I think with Mike Elko, I think A&M fans should understand something going into this because of the way they recruited. And I do think they've got some nice players at the top and they've got depth. And I love what he did in the portal. And that's going to give them a real chance this year is kind of those top end players and the portal. But they don't have like a strong group of seniors. If you were doing NFL draft projections today, I think they have a couple of defensive linemen that would be top 3 round projections. I don't know if there'd be a round 1 projection today, really the whole team. And again, they won't have a lot of seniors. And one of those two would probably be the Purdue transfer, Nick Scorton, who was a all Big Ten first teamer last year. But and then if you were to say who's going to be on the first or second team all SEC entering the season, maybe Torian York, maybe Shamar Turner, and maybe the aforementioned Nick Scorton. So they're not overloaded with proven talent. They do have a lot of returning starters. They do have a lot of guys that have played a lot of football, and they do have some pretty exciting players in the backfield and on defense. What I really like is what Elko, I think, could do year one on the defensive side of the ball. And then I think Connor Wigman and Colin Klein's offense, how quickly that clicks, and if the O-line can protect Connor, that's where they can get to that ceiling. And I don't know what that ceiling is in year one. And realistically, maybe it's a 9-3 type of year would be the ceiling. And I also don't think the floor is that low either. I think, but year one is going to be, I think, some ups and downs. They don't have the roughest schedule ever, but it's pretty hard still. Their 4 toughest games, in my opinion, are Notre Dame, Missouri, LSU, and Texas. But road game at Auburn, road game at Florida. You know, if the Aggies are just hovering in the pack in the SEC, which could be very likely in year one, it's not like those games are gimmies. Go to Starkville, go to Columbia, South Carolina. So it's I think you'll see some ups and downs. I think if they could get to 9 wins in year one, 9-3 or including that bowl win, I think it'd be a good first step. I know Jimbo was 9-4 in year one with that one of those losses being a last-second loss to Clemson. If that year can look like that, where they win some meaningful games and impress in a couple of the losses, I think that would be a great first step. But to answer you, Joy, I think he can turn it around pretty quickly. And the reason I say that, defense, I think, is going to be quickly pretty elite under him, just like it was even earlier on when he was here. And I think Colin Klein, I think that was a home run hire. And just as soon as they can get that offense going to go with that defense and the way Elko makes that the foundation of his program, I think they're going to do some nice things. The dude gets it from the portal to roster management to having a very disciplined culture, but the guys seem to be kind of embracing it and enjoying it. He's got good culture with his players, but he also there's a pretty high level of discipline. Joy, I keep going back to you because not because we feud on Twitter, but because you're the LSU person here. Tommy Moffitt, I think, will be big.
Yeah, he will be. I was pissed.
Were you? Good. I like that. You know, I like the hires that the fan bases of the schools. In other words, it's the anti John Chavis, right? When y'all were like, oh, okay.
Take him.
Okay, Aggies. But Duke didn't want to see Elko go, right? LSU fans go, damn it, they got our guy Moffitt. And Kansas State fans were devastated when Colin Klein left. They brought in Aggie and Jordan Peterson to coach the secondary, and the Kansas fans felt like that was been the strength of their team the last few years. So those are always good when you can do things like that, and that's encouraging.
All right, Billy. So first, I wanted to thank you for getting Elko out of the ACC. I can't deal with Duke being competent in football, so I'm ready for them to go back to how they used to be when I was in school.
That was an outlier.
Yeah, I think he's a great hire for you guys. He's a great coach. I'm glad to be rid of him. More importantly, I know you have a relationship with Johnny Manziel. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, what's the best Manziel story that you're comfortable sharing with a bunch of strangers?
A lot of strangers, not just four of y'all.
You can pretend it's just the four of us. We won't tell right. you.
I'm just trying to think. There are so many, you know, just – you just wild nights at times, like, and just, I'm talking about just not wild, like what's going on, but just who you run into, who you end up around, where it ends up going. I remember, you know, one time I'm playing horse in San Diego at some random little college gym with Johnny and Jameis Winston. Like there, that was one of the deals. Like there, this was a trip. This was a trip. Okay, this is not a story, but this is like this was when he's done playing. He'd always tell me, hey, when I'm done, because I was like, I'm not going on any of your trips nowadays. Like, I'll never hear the end of it. If I'm in, you know, spotted in Vegas with Johnny while he's still playing at A&M, and like, you know, I'm like, when you're done, I'll roll wherever. Like, it's, you know, I'm single, not married. I'm free. I can do what I want. You know, like, we'll do it. It'll be fun. Well, he gets done. And speaking of Duke, after that Duke game, we got up, you know, we were in the same hotel. We go have breakfast down there. It's the game. He's jumping over people and running around. And I guess he had stayed up all night. And we just sat there and ate breakfast with his highlights going on all over SportsCenter. And then we took a cab to the airport, and he went to Miami and I went home, and he was literally going to go stay at LeBron's house. And that was basically like he ended up, you know, signing with LeBron and those guys. And so that kind of started his journey. Right. And I was like, I can't go on that because you're still playing. And so I'm not going to go until you're in, done. So he gets done. We're going to go to Cabo. Well, he gets in trouble. He gets in trouble for,
I think there was Johnny getting in trouble.
Yeah, there was like a picture that came out. So his people called me because I'm, contrary to what message boards think about me, I'm actually pretty responsible. So they called me and say, hey, can you convince him, like, you guys don't need to go. He does not need to be in Cabo. You know, he's about the season with Brown, you know. Okay. So we go to Boston, where the Red Sox ownership, the Fenway Group, was affiliated with LeBron and Mav Carter, and I think they own their company that represented him. So we go to the Red Sox, couple of Red Sox games. We sit in the owner's suite. It's very tame. Before that trip, he told me, hey, bring your passport. I need my passport in Boston. He was like, I don't know. You never know. And so I – A part of me doesn't want to get left out, so I bring my passport. We go to Boston. They have us a house to go to. Like, it's like four of us. We have a house to go to Cape Cod. And I'm trying to hype up Cape Cod. I'm like, dude, there's like great whites out there. There's parties. Like, no. He goes, let's go. We're sitting there eating some like New England clam chowder after being out at like the hotel clam chowder. And we're all four sitting there. And he goes, look, flights to Toronto tomorrow morning, Boston to New York to Toronto. I go, you can't go to Toronto, right? Trust me, nobody recognizes me there. I swear to God, it's next thing I know, we're in Toronto. We're bro, going we're to like to really? Yeah, we're in some nice block of hotel rooms. We go to like Drake's favorite restaurant, and they come up and they bring us everything, and then they say, well, you know, Drake's not in town, but so his friend Drake's the OVO squad or whatever. Take us all over Toronto for a couple nights. It was a blast. You know, it was really fun. While we're there, we're sitting at a pool party one day, and he looks at me and goes, oh, shit. And I go, what? He goes, I just got drafted. I go, but you drafted. He goes, Padres just drafted me. He saw it on Twitter, and he got drafted by the San Diego Padres while we were NHL dudes. So then I see him and our other buddy on the phone. And our other guy who was kind of his manager comes up and goes, you know what they're doing? I go, yeah, I know what they're doing. They're booking Cabo, aren't they? They go to Cabo. I say, I'm not going to Cabo. It's the one thing that that's ridiculous. They go to Cabo. I go to SEC Media Days in Birmingham from Toronto. I go straight to Media Days. Then I go to San Diego, and I'm supposed to go to L.A. that night. I miss the L.A. night. And he's with it. There's a million stories from that night. And then we end up in San Diego for the Jameis thing. So that was a long story to say that was 1 week in the deal. So I think in Toronto, we're like in the booth with the Weeknd. Like he was new. He was like, he had done a concert in the after party. Like you just never know where it's gonna go. But that was a good one. The other one was he called me the night before they played Bama in 2014. From the team hotel, and he said, I wouldn't expect him to call him. He's like, hey, I go, well, he goes, F Nick Saban. You know, Nick Saban. He goes, I'm gonna go for 500 on his ass tomorrow. We're gonna put 50 on him. I'm like, all right. And I think he was like 460 yards and A&M scored, I think 42 or 45 points in that game, but like the night before the game, and he's like, he put whoever it was, I think it was Blake Sims at the time. He thinks Blake effing Sims can simulate me in practice. I'm like, dude, I don't think that was really an insult. I don't get it. And then he went out and damn near did it. You know, he got close to both those numbers. And that was prime Nick Saban defense. That wasn't, you know, the one that, you know, Johnny was kind of the first one and Cliff. And some that was kind of the first group to put a little, you know, dent in the armor there on that defense. And then other, you know, your Clemson Tigers followed suit, and then LSU with, you know, but Johnny and them were kind of the first ones. But he just wanted Saban just because he wanted to prove the year before wasn't a fluke.
That's pretty badass.
Calling a shot.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so Billy, so last year before the season started, there was one game on the schedule that I knew was going to provide all sorts of message board fodder, and that was the Michigan-Ohio State game, just because of the intensity that surrounded that rivalry. And there's going to be you knew there was going to be a lot at stake when that game was played. And so as I look at the calendar this year, I think there's another game that's going to provide plenty of message board fodder, and that's the Texas A&M. Texas game, which hasn't been played for quite some time. So tell me what I can expect for that Texas A&M game.
First of all, I got that. That is a gif of me from that game that the Longhorn fans like to use that is not suitable for radio. They love using it whenever I make them mad. But I was yelling at the official like 12, you know, I guess it was literally 12 years ago. And they've inserted whatever gif. Are y'all pulling it up? It's not It's not PG.
We're an audio only podcast, but I need to see this for myself. But
I'll say this. There are more than one of my friends that use it as they're still to this day when I call, it comes up on their phone. But whoever did it, they thought they really, it's just like anything on social media, they thought they really got me. And I'm like, if you guys only knew me, like, I think that's absolutely hilarious. That and the one where I'm like this. And I'm like the Iraqi. They've got me in the maroon. And I'm the Iraqi information minister. And the Kyle Field blowing up behind me. It's like the detonation. And they've got me in the maroon, but with my face. It's that. Those two are just, I think they're brilliant. But anyway, that game, gosh, I think I was telling Feinbaum this today. I don't think there's a day that goes by that somebody doesn't call and ask me for tickets or talk to me about that game. A&M played Texas a month or so ago in baseball, and I went down there. Everyone, you know, in burnt orange was asking me about it, and they're so excited to come into the league. And we all act like we hate each other and stuff. And look, A&M, and I'll be the first to say this, and this is kind of joy. This has been an LSU fan thing to say, well, A&M's not our rival. I don't think LSU is a rival. I just think LSU is there's a great intersection of the two fan bases, particularly in Houston, but really Texas, Louisiana, the oil and gas. And there's history there.
Completely agree.
Yeah. So, but we're not a rival. And just like LSU fans don't consider A&M a rival, A&M fans honestly don't consider LSU a rival. They just want to, and that's the thing. I got, you know, I think the way me and you intersected was I was going at it with all the LSU fans because I got clipped saying, I don't like LSU.
You mean I stuck my nose in your business? not me. Couldn't be.
Yes, there it is. There we go. We're not on baseball. I forgot. So it was, it's not a rivalry, but it's very, we both really want to beat each other, but that's not, LSU fans don't think about A&M every day except when they play. But I think we both look at each other and like to see each other lose. That's kind of where that one is. There's the hate and the family feud and the lifelong, we don't like the Longhorns, we don't like the Aggies, we make fun of Aggies, we can't stand Texas. That's that rivalry. And that's what A&M's been missing since they've joined the SEC, is that blood rival. And honestly, Joy, you can tell me this. I don't know that LSU has one of that level. I mean, I think A&M Texas, and I'll give the Longhorns this credit, they're bringing in two of what will be, I think, two of the five, but maybe even higher, biggest rivalries in the league. It's Texas OU and A&M Texas. And you go Iron Bowl, you go largest cocktail party, and you go Egg Bowl. And I mean, this one, because of the way of the split, because it's going to take place at Kyle Field in front of 105,000, because of the you know, again, the this battle, and some would say it's a battle, you know, that internet, the Twitter, the battle of the mids. Because neither team has been able to really, you know, get it's true. Like, Longhorn fans hate the idea that, you know, up until this year when Sark got them in the playoffs, and by the way, A&M wasn't any good this year. I'm not sure they wouldn't have gone to the playoff playing through the Big 12. I mean, Texas, the biggest thing they did was beat Alabama before Alabama could figure it out. An A&M team that struggled to get to 7-5 was – a series away from being, maybe if Anaya Smith doesn't get called out of bounds at the three, they might have beaten Bama. There is a noticeable, and they won't admit this, but in the 12 years up until this season, so the first 11 years, A&M's been clearly better than Texas, and they've done it in a better, I mean, it's not even close. I've watched both conferences. Now, Texas is coming in at just the right time. They're Sark, and they're doing a nice job. Do I think they get a little overhyped? Yes. Do I think they're in for a little realization that, look, you played a lot of close games in the last few years against U of H, Iowa State, Baylor, Kansas, K-State. Like, this is different because those the way you played in those games and you lose to Oak State. And I know last year's TCU team was great, but a bunch of the other ones weren't. When you're playing in the SEC, unless you're playing Vandy, if you're on the road and you play like that, you lose. And you don't have that room margin for error unless you're Bama and Georgia. And I don't think Texas is there yet in talent. I am impressed with how he's turned that roster over, and I think he's doing a good job. I'm not going to sit here and completely bash it. I do think they're one step ahead of or one step behind what a lot of people think they are, and I think the league's going to show that this year. But they're going to come into the season ranked higher than A&M. They will be a favorite right now over A&M, and I think that's deserved based on what's returning. So that game's going to be massive, whether it's playoff implications for Texas, whether it's Sark, hey, you better beat A&M or this is a really failed season, or whether it's A&M and Elko going, man, if we could cap this thing off with a win over Texas at Kyle Field to end the year, this thing's going to take off. And I think there's going to be a ton at stake. It's the biggest game the state of Texas has seen in, I mean, I really don't know when. A&M's played some massive games at Kyle Field against the likes of Bama and LSU and not Georgia, because we've never seen Georgia come to A&M in 12 years in the SEC. Yeah, never. And never – we've played Georgia once in 12 years. They've never come to Kyle Field. And that will be 14 years now because of this. So in the first 14 years in the SEC, A&M will play Georgia one time.
That's nuts.
And never at Kyle Field. And they will play Kentucky one time, not that anyone cares. And never in Lexington.
That's wild.
They need to fix that schedule. Right?
That's a whole nother episode, I think.
That's right.
Right.
I appreciate having another pro SEC person on the podcast. Let me tell you, I'm getting my cup is full tonight.
God, am I in ACC country? I heard the Duke and the Clemson.
You got two ACC guys, Clemson and who is?
But we don't do the whole conference love.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We don't do.
You don't chant as ACC, ACC.
No. I do sarcastically.
They asked. I think one of the first episodes y'all asked me if I've ever chanted SEC. I'm pretty sure y'all asked me that one time.
I've never done it. I like when they do it though, and I like the intensity when you go somewhere and you lose. I don't like seeing the team because I know it's going to be a long week on Texags, and there's going to be a lot of fodder for you guys. So I don't like that part of it, but it is like, yeah, okay, taunt with the SEC chance. I get it, you know. And so it's always kind of fun.
It's just our little brother down the street in Columbia doesn't do much or add much to the conference, and they're cackling over there, crowing, whatever the hell they do.
Hey, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to incur the wrath of Alyssa Lang. I'm not worried about Shane. Oh, yeah. It's Alyssa. Although she could be happy and content with that basketball back to back.
That's true. Add her to the list. Who's
all right?
All right, Billy. So we haven't really talked much about Texags other than we talked about that it provides some content and material for the site. But I mean, I would say Texags really is kind of the gold standard for message boards. And it's really, I think we sell it short. We say, well, it's just message boards because it's a whole lot more than just a message board, right? I mean, You guys cover Texas A&M 360. So I realize that when we're only talking about just a
– Yeah, but that's what y'all do. I get and by the way, the message boards are a huge part of what we do. It's not as much of what I do, but it's a – I mean, I've got my premium for them, but it's a huge part of what Texags is, and it's kind of at its core, that's how it started back in the very late 90s. It was because of the message boards. We're bringing the people – to the site, to the forum.
Yep. Well, so I pulled, we can't read them all, but I pulled some of my favorite posts from Texags, and I'm just going to give you kind of the topic of each one, and you tell me which one is your favorite that we can talk about.
Okay.
So I've got one that talks about the mafia invading the SEC.
Yeah.
One that talks about maybe the marching band could help Jimbo with the offense. one that maybe Jimbo should just hire a magician to help design some trick plays. One is just make Jimbo's life so terrible that he quits. One was to maybe install some sort of a Jimbo tax to try to fund the buyout. Apparently, it's kind of a moot point now.
Yeah, we didn't do that one.
One was a guy who just wanted to straight up fight Jimbo.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. I don't care. I can tackle a couple of these in quick fashion because I did my homework.
Okay.
The fight Jimbo one, I'm going to tell you something about Jimbo. I was on the phone with him the night. I called him after that Nick Saban thing broke when he was, you know, saying, oh, A&M bought their whole class and, you know, that whole deal. Like, I've seen Jimbo fired up and I'll never tell that conversation, but he was not happy, and I think he would have run right through Nick Saban that night. And I know Alabama fans will hate to hear that. But, you know, like Nick Saban, you know, Jimbo's like he grew up. I'm telling you, just Jimbo grew up fighting. You know, I think Jimbo and his brother, like, he grew up fighting. And I've been in there where I've gone from, they were at football camp and I was talking to him about the team, and he went in there one day. He's like, "Here, come in here." And he's getting, you know, the strength coach is putting him through the paces in there in the weight room. Jimbo's like, I think that guy on the measure board would not want to fight Jimbo. I don't know if that would go the way he thinks. I think he's just thinking that Jimbo's short and he wears those glasses. He's lulling you to sleep there. But
guys, did you see the picture of him working out at Planet Fitness? Because he looks like I could have beat him up. I mean, like, he doesn't give off, like, he gives off punchable vibes, Billy.
Boy, I'm half scared of you, so that's not really a fair. The Planet Fitness thing, that one blew my mind. Other than I do know the area, and I do know that that is the I was like, people are give the guy credit for going and working out and not thinking he's above being out in public down here after getting fired. But that is the closest gym to where he lives. I will say that. But I'd like to get him into Gold's and catch up with him, honestly. But what's the other one? I like the what were they? It was the the band one. I kind of glossed over because I told you guys before we went on, like, I always look at what y'all put out and I like to think in my head, is that an Aggie or just a troll? Mm-hmm. Or is that an Aggie trolling? Normally, it's pretty clear to me. Mm-hmm. That one could be true. It could be a guy. There are Aggies that love the Fighting Texas Aggie Band, which is incredible. If you've never seen this person, that's another one of those things that I'm like, anyone that watches A&M, you have to watch this band. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it in college football when you're in the stands looking down on that. But they love their Aggie band, and that guy could have been serious. And that was definitely an Aggie, and I couldn't tell you if he was joking or serious because he may well have been serious. And then what were one of the last two you said? Because that's the one I want to dig into.
So there was the last one was that maybe the COVID vaccine had caused a mental fog to come over Jimbo, and maybe that was excusing some of the decision making.
That's probably right on point, honestly.
That one, when I saw that, okay, that was the funniest one I've ever. Whoever wrote that, I want to like have a beer with them.
That was TX Rancher 69, of course.
I'd like to go to 69 Ranch.
Close to 69.
And second, yeah, that guy was funny. The one that got me was when the guy's talking about, what was it, about making things as miserable as they can for him, uh-huh, and make him quit.
Yeah,
I honestly, like, there's a part of me in my soul that believes that if they were at 7-5, right, like, a part of me in my soul, Ole Miss game is what I think got the wheels going, that was actually going to happen. And I do think, it's crazy as it sounds, I think Lane Kiffin and all that poking and prodding, and then that morning on game day where he's, you know, talking about A&M and the game day host are laughing. You got to think, we all went to these schools. Think about these donors that spend all this money on buildings and facilities and And I mean millions upon millions of dollars. Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all spend more than anyone, Billy. So your donors feel
differently than ours. That is true. And hopefully spending it more wisely here moving forward. But think about those guys and women, and they're like, we do all of this, and we're tuning in to enjoy college football, and we're watching game day. We're like this laughing stock. And
yeah.
I think it added to, like, he needed to win that game that day. And it was an 11 a.m. game, and they lost it on the last play, and the field goal got blocked. And I genuinely believe that was kind of the point of no return. It was, because he got fired after beating Mississippi State either a week or 2 weeks later, and I think they won the game in between. But that I really think that was – and he was fired prior to Mississippi State. That game, Ole Miss, is to me what essentially ended it. And I just think that had he won that game and they gone 8-4, okay, instead of 7-5, and they went and lost to Jaden Daniels and LSU in Baton Rouge, 8-4, and he stayed, right? If that had happened, there's a part of me that thinks this guy, whoever it was, I don't think that's the wildest thing I've ever heard, because I know people like at play, and I think there would have been people that would say, turn the screws, make him quit. You're like, it doesn't sound – that one to me sounded a little more realistic. And I'm like, I wonder
if he's serious.
Be planning that out.
Well, I didn't include him in here, but there were a couple others. There was one, for example, that suggested that maybe they just make him a janitor or a bus driver and still pay him the salary, but they just have him do something else other than coach the football team.
I remember that one.
My favorites are the ones like the legendary ones of I said this one, somebody went on there and just started, hey, my girlfriend works at this car dealership in Norman, and a lot of the football players, you know, I forget the exact text of it, but it was kind of like, you know, Rhett Bomar and Adrian Peter, whoever it was, they basically worked there, but they didn't, and they, you know, it was the big red auto thing, but it actually started as a rumor on somebody on TexAds posted asking about it, and then it kind of blew up, and it ended up, you know, OU back then, what would we call it, probation,
right.
Stuff. And the other one was President Gates, who was leaving to go work at the White House as a defense secretary, posted on there and was basically like, hey, I've been here the whole time, posting amongst y'all, just so like everybody goes, oh. So he fully embraced the crazy and then went up to D.C. where it was probably that much crazier, right?
That's right.
Even more crazy.
But
could you imagine those message boards?
Oh, and then there was the night in November this year, you know, the whole Mark Stoops.
Oh, yes.
That deal. That was probably the single craziest message board night that I can remember. That was just insane. Say this, I know Mike Elko went to bed thinking Mark Stoops was getting the job and that deal was done, and woke up. I'm 99% sure he woke up with an MOU faxed over and a job offer. So imagine if you're Elko and
you want
that job, and you go down this road, and next thing you know, they're going to hire Mark Stoops. And I mean, I'm sure you're sitting there, if you're Elko, going, really, like that, like I make it Kalen DeBoer, make it Dan Lanning, or but you know, nothing against Mark Stoops, but that, you know, he's probably like, that was my job, you know. And then to wake up the next day and you've got the job offer and you're having to go, wait, what happened while I was asleep? I do know for a fact that he went to sleep thinking that, you know, Mark Stoops was hired at Texas A&M. So that was a wild one, maybe more so than anything. And
I think a lot of us went to sleep thinking Mark Stoops was hired at
A&M.
Yeah. You went to sleep that night?
Of course I did. Jimbo was gone. I slept like a baby.
Joy was
she's Joy asleep by 9 o'clock.
She just cracked her knuckles and was like, my work here is done. And then you sat there and were like, what do I do now?
All right, so I sent you some other posts. I'm going to do two other posts, not TechSags posts, just to just to kind of expand your wings a little bit here, Billy. This one, after we talked about Johnny Manziel, I think is a little bit apropos. This was from a Florida State message board on warchant.com. This poster says, "Has anyone blown money on drinks and lap dances for players after a game? I did in the French Quarter in 99 after we won. Fun times till Monday morning. Ugh. I was realizing how much money I'd frivolously blown. But, man, it was fun. No luck in Louisiana. And Atlanta versus Houston was a good time, even though we lost. Best time in Atlanta was the Chick-A-Filet Bowl, scorching the Cocks, who are cocky. SEC chant shut down." I like how this guy's talking about his old war stories back in 99 of buying players lap dances after the game. That didn't really happen, right, Billy? That stuff never went on.
I can honestly say I've never participated in such shenanigans, proudly, I can say that. Much less, the French Quarter and Bourbon Street. I just don't think that's where, I'm not going to piss off the Louisiana people. I love New Orleans, but yeah, celebrating with the Florida State players after a Sugar Bowl in those. I'd rather do karaoke. Let's put it that way. It is funny that it's funny what message boards will do, where you literally type all of that out and think, yeah, this is a good one to hit. You don't ever really go, wait, this is what I'm actually doing. I'm bragging about buying 18 to 21 year olds lap dances from strippers in New Orleans and in Atlanta. And oh, by the way, I'm admitting I've done it in at least three different. And I'm saying I've been doing it for the last 20 plus years. And then go, yeah, this looks like something I want to hit send on. None of that ever went through his head. He was just like, damn, those were the good old days. Let's run. I guess we should give him credit for not naming like names in that deal, because I'm sure he would have wanted to drop the names, but of which players, was it? I don't know. I don't want to go through the old Florida State guys. It sounds like. I'm not going to incur the wrath of Noel Hottie over here and start cracking jokes about Florida State. So what's our next one?
That's a smart move. Yeah,
let's move on.
Listen, man, I would have spent every dollar I had buying FSU players and stuff if I was there, because this is what kept Virginia Tech from winning a natty. So,
oh,
this is like worth every penny.
I would have emptied my wallet, man.
That's a good point. You would have been like a sabotage the night before. He was prank calling the Texas hotel the night before that bonfire game in 99. This guy was, I'm 99% sure he prank called Mac Brown and got through to his room the night before. acted like he was one of his old friends, and Mac was so nice. He just kept there talking at like 1 a.m. That's a true story. And that was also the time where half the Texas guys got like food poisoning from the Jack in the Box or whatever it was.
All right. Speaking of typing something crazy out and hitting send, we're going to finish off with one last post from your friends out in Lubbock. And I think on their board, they were talking about that crazy plane lady. I think her name was Tiffany Gomez. I
don't know. That, what did he say? That MF or?
Yeah.
Real.
Yeah, so they're talking about that girl. I think she had posted some picture of her in a bikini, drinking a beer or something. Okay. So they're talking about her. So this guy, El Padrino Del Llano, says, "Rookies, you don't ask out a truly crazy chick. They just kind of work their way into your life after you meet her in the bar at Mama Rita's. Then she's running around on your roof on a random fall Wednesday evening with her ex stripper fakers bouncing under her tank top, causing your male neighbors to try to get away from their wives for a look. Then you're a middle-aged guy doing Molly with her while knocking back your fourth tall boy while watching Alice in Wonderland on Netflix. and you might have to keep her from trying to beat the crap out of some loser at the Roswell, at the Roswell Hampton Inn, because he tried to pass himself off as a guest and was charging some Gatorade and frozen entrees to your room. On the plus side, she might assemble your new patio furniture for you or wake up in the middle of the night and dust and vacuum the entire house. Claims that there's a demon on a plane, that's kid stuff.
Wow. I mean, that you know, that what that is, that's like a whole level beyond anything that I've seen on TechBlog. And that is so oddly specific that even, you know, like, I don't believe any of those things happened to El Padre Cabron or whatever it was. But I do think the fact that his mind went there means he should either like, write movie scripts or be locked away. One or the other. I don't know which one it is, but he must be getting into some good like peyote out there in West Texas.
I was trying to think if that was a scene from Breaking Bad or if that really happened.
That's I don't remember a roof dancing. Like, there's a lot of things in there I don't remember from Breaking Bad, but he might have like hodgepodged it from a lot of different movies or whatever. But yeah, that one. That's one of those ones. I don't often, people think I like delete and ban a lot. We do have like really hardworking moderators that are volunteer moderators. Like, that's a hard job. And people get so mad sometimes with the, if there's inconsistency or, and everyone deems something an inconsistency. And one thing's one thing to somebody's eyes and it's another, and someone's really offended or not. So it's not like Twitter or X or whatever, where it's, you know, that big a monster to control. But for us, you know, in this company of ours, it is, it has, you know, it is a pretty massive landscape to try to cover 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I don't go around, it would take over my whole life. Maybe if I was married to the rooftop dancer, I would have time to sit at home and just go on there. But me being kind of single and living here in College Station, I like to travel. I don't have time to just live on there. So I don't go ban people willy-nilly because I just don't, you know, it's like content or my life. But I would probably look into banning that guy off the site permanently after reading that. I think I would just be like, okay, you're crazy and you just tipped your hand and there's going to be a lot more coming. It's kind of like the time I saw OJ Simpson and was talking to him and the people I was with, and he told the girls I was with, and this is true. He said, don't love someone more than you love them, because you'll always chase that love and it'll never be enough and it'll make you crazy and make you do crazy things. That was a quote. That was a hand tip. That was from OJ. That was a hand tip. This guy tipped his hand on that poke. Yeah. I would ban him. I would permanently ban him. He'd have to, and he'd be back on the site 5 minutes later under a new name.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Man, Billy, thanks for thanks for coming on with us. It's been great. We kept you longer than we originally told you we would, but it was too much. It was too good.
Yeah, it's been awesome, man.
Hey, I'm being serious. As soon as whoever it was that recommended it, I'm glad we were arguing that night, because I'm glad that, and we weren't arguing. That was just y'all picking on me. But I was
our arguments have tapered down quite a bit.
Yeah, we've lost the vitriol.
Yeah, but, we don't hate each other anymore.
But I know you're sitting there waiting for the next, you know, A&M and LSU play baseball soon. I don't think the Aggies and Clemson will meet anytime soon. But as soon as that came out, you know, where it was like, when you guys messaged me, I said, okay, this is going to be fun. You guys have fun doing this. I think your listenership is only going to go up. And I'll tell you, from doing, I listen to a ton of podcasts. I do all this stuff, and of all shapes and sizes and different things, like the ones that I think college football fans like the most are just the fun ones, you know. And I promise you, I'll get more compliments on this sit down with you guys. I swear, over the next, whenever it comes out, and you know, over the next few days, It's like when I did SEC Mike and Cousin Shane up in Nashville. The ones that are just, you can tell, like, the hosts and the guests are just having fun. And I think that's what gets y'all with everybody, is everybody, you guys are tapping into something that everybody enjoys, all college football. Doesn't matter where they went to school and stuff. So keep it going. We'll keep enjoying it. And we will try to continue to give y'all as much as we can. I can promise you that.
Well, thanks again, Billy. I appreciate the kind words. And if there's anything we can ever do to help you out, let us know.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Thank y'all.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
All right. That'll do it for this week's episode, the MBG Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. You can check out more content at messageboardgeniuses.com. And we'll see you next time, losers.